So you're familiar with the little comic strip called Peanuts, right? Charlie Brown, the melancholy little bald head boy that always has these insightful conversations with his friends. Well, one day he was sitting next to Peppermint Patty, who proceeds to tell him about the first day of school. She said, "Hey, guess what, Chuck? The first day of school today, and I got sent to the principal's office." And then she says, "It's your fault, Chuck." He said, "My fault? How could it possibly be my fault? You say everything is my fault." She said, "You're my friend, aren't you, Chuck? You should have been a better influence on me." Well, indeed, we do influence our friends. I'm not sure that our friends are an excuse for our behavior, but she did point out something insightful. Proverbs 13:20 says, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." Now, of course, you know that the theme of the book of Proverbs is wisdom, skill in living, the ability to navigate life in a manner that is consistent with the principles of life. To do the right thing, to have good perception. All of these are things that we understand as part of wisdom. And so we also, as we know what wisdom is, kind of a foundation, then we go from there to ask ourselves, how can we gain wisdom? Well, we've answered that question numerous ways throughout the book of Proverbs, but the answer that lies before us this morning is to surround ourselves with the right kind of people. Proverbs 27 says a little bit differently, "As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friends." Now, both of these verses we'll be looking into in a little bit more depth here in a moment, but they both aim at the same point, and that is that we are to choose friends wisely, because wisdom comes through friends. We are to choose friends wisely because wisdom comes through friends. Of course, this is a message that we often will be preaching to teenagers, but it's important for adults to understand as well. You see, the reason for that is because character of close friends affects your own character. There are a couple words that we need to consider here in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. The first is the idea of walks. He who walks with wise men. This implies a habitual, consistent time of being around someone. Their course of life is on a parallel track with that person. Likewise, we see the converse of it, that a companion of fools will be destroyed. And remember, we talked all the way back at the beginning about the parallelism that exists in Proverbs, and that sometimes the second phrase will shed light on the meaning of the first phrase and vice versa. So this idea of a companion is parallel to the idea of walking with someone. And the word companion is the idea of someone who is a close personal friend. These are the people that we spend much of our time with. These are the people that we allow to influence us. In fact, the word companion that's used here in Proverbs 13 was sometimes used in the Hebrew language to describe an attendant at a wedding, what we would call nowadays a groomsman. Right? This is the best man. This is the intimate friend. So we're not talking here, let's just be clear right up front, we are not talking about befriending unbelievers in respect to being friendly with them. We're not saying that we are to wall ourselves off from other people who are unbelievers, that we are to have no contact with the world. That is not at all what is being taught here. What is being taught here is that we need to be very choosy about those who are our close, intimate friends. Those who we spend significant amounts of time with, those who we allow to influence our thinking, those to whom we go for counsel. Those intimate friends need to be a very small and particular group of people. This does not in any way excuse us from our obligation to befriend sinners, to befriend those in our circle of influence so that we can communicate the gospel to them. What it is talking about is avoiding fools as those who are those that influence you. Because the character of our close friends shapes our character, right? The one who walks with wise men will be wise. He will be made to become wise. He will be shaped in wisdom. And so both for the good and the bad, the character of those who are close to us shapes ours. And remember, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's kind of a hint, an introduction to where we were headed with this lesson. We talked a few weeks ago about the fact that those that we converse with, we have the ability to shape thinking, right? We said that's what a conversation essentially is. I'm inviting you to think along with me. Now, you can choose to go along with me in your thinking, or you can reject the ideas that I'm verbalizing. But what I'm doing when I talk to you is I'm inviting you to think alongside me. And so as that is a very real dynamic that's taking place in a conversation, we also have the potential of tempting others to sinful thinking, do we not? And when we present things that are untrue about God, when we present things that are untrue about our situation, when we complain, when we badmouth, when we gossip, we are inviting the person that we're talking to participate in our wrong thinking. And this is how we influence one another. Well, if you're spending a great amount of time with someone, you're talking on a regular basis with someone, you are running on a parallel track as a close personal friend with someone, that presents you with a very real temptation if that person is a fool. You are being tempted towards foolishness. What's the old kind of southern redneck proverb? If you lay with the dogs, you'll get fleas. A somewhat more colloquial way of saying the same thing, right? Now, many of you know that I was a youth pastor for 10 years, and it's a very common discussion amongst youth pastors and parents and even teens to some extent, whether young people hang around poor influences because that's what they are or because they become that by hanging around those influences. See what I'm saying? I mean, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? And the answer is, of course, yes. Right? You know? I mean, they hang around those kind of people because that's what they want to become. But then they become that because they hang around those kind of people. You know? I mean, if I could tell you all the conversations I've had with parents who say, well, you know, I just wish Johnny or Susie wouldn't hang around those people. They're really a good kid, but they've just been hanging around some wrong influences. And sometimes you just want to look at the parent and say, well, maybe your kid is the wrong influence. Right? We try to say it, you know, as pastors a lot more tactfully and lovingly than that. But I mean, right? We know birds of a feather flock together, as we kind of say it in our lingo. We also know that there is an influencing dynamic that takes place when you hang around people. And so the answer is really a both and. We choose our friends, and then our friends influence us. Now, this is true for teenagers, but it's also true in adulthood. I would say the thing that shifts when you become an adult is this. If you, and really, honestly, this is true to some extent through your teen years and becomes more and more true as you get older. If you are a consistent testimony and you're a verbal witness for Christ, sometimes that acts as kind of a natural filter. Right? If you're consistent in your testimony and you are verbally testifying to the gospel, those who are antagonistic towards the gospel, those who want to live as fools, will realize that that message is intertwined with who you are, and they will reject you as they reject the message. Now, we ought not to do anything that causes offense unnecessarily. We ought not to do anything that really brings reproach to the gospel by the way that we act. By the same token, I think people recognize this is the testimony that this person leads. This is what they're about. This is their life. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time around that. And so through your teen years, especially your older teen years and then into adulthood, there does seem to be this kind of natural filter that those who are willfully foolish, those who are scorners, will move away from you if you're a consistent testimony. So we see in Proverbs 13:20, the one who walks with wise men, that is the person who makes it a point to be around wise people, will then become wise. The last part of the verse teaches us that those who are close to fools will have trouble. The companion, the close personal friend of fools, will be destroyed. Now, the Hebrew word here that's rendered to be destroyed is the idea of encountering trouble. In fact, depending on what translation you're using, you might see it translated precisely that way. The idea is to have trouble. He will suffer harm, we might say. There's harm that comes with being close, intimate friends with fools. I mean, how many times have we heard stories about a young person who was, quote unquote, at the wrong place at the wrong time? He just happened to be in the back seat when his friends chose to rob a convenience store. Or he just happened to be in a place where a fight broke out. Well, the Bible tells us this is a really very real possibility. If we hang around people who are making foolish choices, if they are our close personal friends, trouble's going to come. And you say, well, that person is innocent. Well, perhaps they're innocent of that particular crime. And we hope our justice system can sort that out. But the fact is they're not innocent of choosing friends foolishly. And sometimes that comes with harm. It comes with trouble. It comes with grave consequences. And so we must be careful, even if it's not to that extreme of a degree, we still need to be careful because there's harm that comes with being around fools, those being our close personal friends. And so sometimes it is necessary to separate ourselves from those who are embracing foolishness. Separation is sometimes wise. And it is sometimes necessary. You perhaps have your Bible open to the book of Proverbs already. I would invite you to go back to the very beginning of Proverbs, this kind of introduction to the book of Proverbs. You remember that many of these things were written for the benefit of Solomon's own son, who would be reading it. And in this prologue here in Proverbs chapter 1, we considered it extensively when we began our series. But notice again in verse 10, Proverbs 1, verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood, let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possession. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path.'" One of the reasons that Solomon wrote the Psalms is to warn his son about what kind of people you need to avoid. What kind of people you need to be careful of casting your lot in with. Of, as we might say again, a colloquial expression, hitching your wagon to. Having close, intimate friendships with. Now, there's also something, kind of another lesson right here by the placement in the book, right? Proverbs, the proverbist is warning his son. Why is that? Well, because we have to recognize that the simple man, remember the categories of fool? The simple is kind of that budding fool. He's kind of a fool in training. It's the state in which we're all born as simple. Right? The simple man doesn't always know enough to recognize that there's danger in this friendship. And so if you're an authority this morning, be mindful that sometimes the simple have to be kept from the wrong kind of friendship. The way I put it in your notes is, be aware that a simple man may not know enough to separate from a fool. You might have to do it for him. Obviously, there is tremendous application to parenting here, is there not? Well, I just let my child make their choices. I just kind of, you know, try to teach them and then just let them make whatever choices they want. Okay? You do need to teach your children the principles so that they can make wise choices on their own. You do need to instruct them in the way and then allow them a little bit of slack so that they can make choices. But my friend, if you see this fool under your care making a dangerous choice, even in respect to friends, you do have a responsibility to step in and to stop it. I was reading an article, I think just the other day, about some of these apps that are able to hide things on your phone. You know, this calculator app that it looks just like a calculator, but if you type in the right code, it actually unlocks all these hidden files. So you're like, what? Yeah, just go Google it, right? So this article was talking about parents who snoop on their children's phone. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not called snooping. That's called good parenting, right? You have the potential of great harm befalling your simpleton, right? Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. And so, as an authority, sometimes you have to make the choice that that simpleton may not be wise enough to make on his own. And of course, the application for teens and young people is that's your parents' responsibility to keep you from harm. And even if you think that they're wrong, let's go back to Proverbs again and see what our response ought to be to those who are in authority over us. So if there's a budding relationship there with a simple man, the authority might need to step in and warn them. Coach them, train them, and help them. Now, let me just kind of meddle a little bit more since I'm already in it. As parents, it's your job to teach them. And I would say probably when you're starting to consider like male-female relationships, we're now adding a whole extra dimension. Because when we think about, you know, who your children are going to date and ultimately marry, I'm going to kind of actually touch on some of those passages when we get to the marriage stuff in a few weeks. I'm going to actually touch on some of those, you know, if you're in the shopping phase. But as parents, it's your job to teach them those things, right? It's your job to instill those principles in them. And so your options are really kind of simple. Completely keep them away from guys or girls. Like lock them in a box and don't let them even see a guy or a girl, whichever the case may be. And then one day you let them out of the box and you just let them run off into the sunset and figure it out on their own. Okay? Or your other option would be to coach them and to train them, to instill in their thinking right principles while you still have the chance. And so that means allowing them to get engaged in some relationships and coaching them through those relationships. I cannot tell you how many situations I've seen as a youth pastor where the parents shelter and shelter and shelter and shelter, and then the kid goes out on their own and they have no clue how to make good relationship decisions, especially with the opposite sex. Because they haven't been coached. They haven't been allowed to participate in relationships and use that as an opportunity for coaching on the part of the parent. So I would encourage you to go ahead. Let them build some friendships. Let them build some relationships and wisely help them navigate those. Keep a close eye on them. Make sure there's not something dangerous developing. But don't take the approach of lock them in the freezer until they're 18. I just would not recommend that approach. And then, of course, we see this principle in the New Testament. I want to show you one passage. I think I've got the time to do this. Go over, keep your finger there in Proverbs, but go over to 1 Corinthians 15, because this is important, and it goes back to something we mentioned earlier. We mentioned earlier that what we're talking about here is close personal friendships. We are not saying that this is an excuse for walling ourselves off with unbelievers. I find Paul's wording under inspiration very interesting in 1 Corinthians 15 because he's developing the idea of separation from those who are walking in rebellion from God. In fact, specifically, he's dealing with church discipline. So 1 Corinthians 15, beginning in verse 9. Excuse me, I'm in the wrong chapter. 1 Corinthians 5. I added a number. 1 Corinthians 5. So beginning in verse 9, Paul says, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. So Paul has explained to them that if someone is in rebellion to God's plan and they refuse to repent, that they are to be separated from. Now, he adds a caveat in verse 10, which is very interesting. He says, yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world. Well, now, isn't that interesting? Paul says, separate yourself from those who are immoral. Oh, by the way, I don't mean unbelievers. Why? Because that's the way unbelievers live. Our posture towards unbelievers should be that of evangelism. And in verse 9, he reiterates his instruction. He says, yet I certainly didn't mean the sexually immoral people of the world, or covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, since then you would need go out of the world. Paul says, I'm not advocating for a monasticism. I'm not advocating for a wall yourself off and don't have any contact with the world. What he's talking about specifically is those who claim to be believers, yet are living like unbelievers. They're living in rebellion to God's plan. You can consider the rest of that passage later, but I do think that's an important contrast. He goes on to explain what he in fact is talking about in the following verses. So let's just think quickly as we close about some marks of biblical friendship. What are some things we see in the book of Proverbs that go along with true friendship? Well, the first, of course, is unconditional love. And this doesn't surprise us. We see it again reiterated in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians, and we see the what biblical love is. A good friend is loyal. He is one who sticks by you, even when things are difficult. He is one who comes alongside of you and helps. So is biblical friendship then kind of this syrupy sweetness where we kind of go along to get along, where we always do the quote-unquote nice thing for our friend? Well, I think you know that biblical friendship is much more than that, because biblical love does what is best for the person who is loved. That may not always be the quote-unquote nice thing. It may not always be the sweet thing, and sometimes it even means the hard thing. And so a good friend offers reliable counsel and encouragement. And sometimes that means loving confrontation. A biblical friend lovingly confronts. Hopefully you kept your place in Proverbs. We're going back there, or you'll see it here on the screen as well. Proverbs 27. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Because the wounds of a friend are not arbitrary, they're not capricious. They are done like a skillful surgeon that does no more damage than what he has to do, but will do the damage that needs to be done, the hard thing, the hurtful thing, in order to excise the sin problem. The wounds of a friend are faithful. They are good wounds. They will hurt. That's why they call them wounds. But they're faithful. They're for our own good. Now, of course, an enemy is a flatterer, right? Oh, you're so wonderful. Everything's sweet. There's nothing to confront here. I just accept you the way you are. I just love you for who you are. I would never judge you. That's not a friend. That's an enemy. If someone is always saying the good and never tells you the hard truths, never disagrees with you because they don't want to damage the friendship, I'm not sure how good a friend that is. Now, please don't misunderstand. A good friend will be loving even in the way they confront. And in fact, let me just go beyond that and also caution you about something. You probably should be a good friend before you try to do very much confrontation. Right? I mean, that confrontation has to be based on a love relationship that is present. And that's why we as fellow believers in the body of Christ need to develop loving relationships with one another. We need to demonstrate our love for another so that when that time comes and we have to say, brother, sister, I don't think you're responding to this as you ought to. Brother, sister, I'm not sure that you really are conducting yourself as you should. And when we have to have those conversations, we already know that person is doing it because they care about us. So that those wounds can be careful, but that they can also be faithful as well. Sometimes we as friends have to be those who rebuke, who tell one another we're wrong, who challenge each other's thinking, and cause us, push us toward being more like Jesus Christ. This is true friendship. The saccharine, syrupy, sweet, go along to get along type of friendship that the world portrays is not meaningful. It's not helpful. Our job as fellow believers is to help one another, to do what is best for the one who is loved. And so in order to do that, sometimes confrontation is needed, but before that, there needs to be a friend relationship. There needs to be one of love and care and concern. How many times have I seen either of the two extremes? Well, I'm never going to confront. I'm never going to talk about that person's problem. Or, oh, goody, I get to confront somebody I have no relationship with. And either of those are foolish directions to go. So my question is for you this morning, do you have a friend like that? I mean, do you have a friend who demonstrates unconditional love and loyalty, counsels you well, gives you good advice, encouragement when you need it, and is willing to say, I don't think you're right. I think maybe you should look at this differently. I'm not sure you're responding rightly when that needs to be done. Do you have a friend like that? Perhaps the more important question is, are you a friend like that? You see, true friendship takes time. And it takes sensitivity. It's like growing a plant. It's not something you can hurry up and make happen. It takes time. And it takes concern and care for the other people. Proverbs 25 says it this way. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. Right? This is the person who's lots of talk. As they say in Texas, he's all hat and no cattle. Right? He's got big ideas. He's got lots of talk. I'm your friend. Oh, yes, I'm your friend. Oh, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to do that for you. And it never happens. Friend that doesn't follow through. What's that like? Well, it's like the other day, my wife was doing some things in town, getting some errands run. And later that day, she said, did it rain here? It rained really hard when we were at Walmart. Like, didn't rain here. Clouded over, looked like it was going to rain, smelled like rain, no rain. How disappointing. When you're in Texas and it's dry and you want rain, how disappointing, right? That's what this friend is. He's the guy who's lots of talk. Lots of promises. Oh, I'm your friend. Oh, my good friend so-and-so here. It doesn't follow through. You see, we have to really genuinely care about people to develop friendships with them. Your friend is not the person who you call your friend. Your friend is the person who you're willing to sacrifice for. Who you're willing to do things for. Who you're willing to help out in the time of need. That's your true friend. And then verse 17 is a little humorous to me. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. Isn't that a funny verse? I mean, we would say it what? Don't wear out your welcome. Here's a little friendship tip from the book of Proverbs. Sometimes friends need space. Some people are so eager to have a friend that they just smother their friends. And what happens, especially, can I just tell you, as I've told you before, I'm an introvert. You all laugh at that, but it's true. I am like that. If somebody comes in really overbearing and they just want to be my great friend, I'm just kind of like, There are people like that, right? So don't smother people. Sometimes you want to be a friend, you get inspired. Oh, this is a great message, Pastor. I need some good, close friends. And now I'm going to like want to spend all my time around these people and just some other people, right? It's a balancing act. I know it's a discretion, but what it is really is a sensitivity to people, right? Even when we greet people when they come in on Sunday morning, you kind of got to read people. Some people are a little apprehensive. They're a little nervous, and it's the first time in a new place. And, you know, if they're all bubbly and running around shaking hands and introducing themselves to everybody, it's probably a good sign that they're comfortable. You know, they're warming up to you. If they're kind of like backing away from you, it's a good sign that they probably need some space. This is all discretion. This is all wisdom. There's like no like textbook for this. But the point is, what does it take to have a good biblical friendship? Well, I would submit to you that both of these verses indicate that we need to be caring about other people. We need to be sensitive to what they need. We need to be more in this relationship for what I can give to them than what I can get from them. Because don't people pick up on that? And really, above all, shouldn't we be the kind of friend that Christ was, is? Giving himself for others. That's the ultimate in friendship. And so it's obvious that friendship is reciprocal. To have a good friend, you must be a good friend. Most of you know the verse Proverbs 18:24. Your parents probably quoted it to you if they knew the Bible while you were growing up. A man who has friends must be friendly. Well, Mom and Dad, I don't have any friends at school. Well, good. Make some. You be friendly. You show more concern about being a friend than having a friend. Now, I think it's a good question for us to ask. Do I have close personal friends that encourage me in the Lord, that lead me in the right path? And if I don't, I should seek those kind of friendships. In fact, let me say this. Probably many of you think of your spouse in this context, right? Your closest personal friend who you share your heart with is your spouse. That's a good thing. And in fact, that is as it ought to be. But I still think it is healthy for us men to have friendships with other godly men that we can kind of share our heart with. Now, men aren't real good at that kind of, you know, touchy-feely stuff, but it's good for us men. And ladies, to have good, close, intimate friendships with other ladies who can share your burdens and heartaches and pray with you, right? These are important. And if you don't have those kind of friendships, let me encourage you to foster them. But above all, let me encourage you to be that kind of friend. Spend more time concerned about how you can be the right kind of friend for other people. And God will give you good friendships that please him and encourage you in the right. If you have a good friend, thank God for him, for her. Maybe it's your spouse, but develop also quality friendships with others of the same sex. And if you don't have a quality friendship, make it a matter of prayer and then work to minister to others, to be the right kind of friend to other people. I gave you a book recommendation. Unfortunately, the book is out of print. If you can find it on Amazon used or something, I would encourage you, or if they ever do a reprint of it, I would encourage you to get it. It's a book called Quality Friendship by Gary Enrig. And it's just a good kind of solid meat and potatoes scriptural treatment of what friendship means. I would often give it to those in my youth group who are having struggles knowing how to have and be the right kind of friend. And it's very helpful for them. It's not written for teenagers per se. In fact, it's written more on an adult level, but it's a very, very helpful book if you ever get a chance to get it. Or you can go on Amazon and find used booksellers and get it there. But Quality Friendship by Gary Enrig. Well, we're going to close in prayer here in just a moment. And Matt's group is not, I mean, Matt is not here, so what I would ask for Matt's group to do is to just kind of divide themselves up evenly between the other two groups. So we'll have Elliot's group over here on my left, your right, and we'll have David Bonnet's group over here in the by the doors. And then I will meet with the teenagers at this middle table. And if either of these groups get overcrowded, I will allow a few adults, a very few adults, because I don't want to squelch the teenagers discussion group. But teens will meet in the middle, and anyone else who feels like they're a teen, right here in the middle table. Let's ask for God's help as we go to our discussion groups, and we'll discuss together some of the things we've learned. Father, we thank you for your word, just the practicality of it. And as we've looked at the book of Proverbs, we've learned so many lessons. Help us, Lord, to be reminded that you are at work in us, and sometimes that work is done through other people. Lord, help us to be the kind of servants that you can use in others' lives, to encourage them, to uplift them, to push them towards what is right. In your Son's precious name, amen.